G'day, I am Mordechai Becher.
And I am Yehoshua Karsh.
And welcome to Two Rabbis and a Podcast. Today we are talking about a very exciting topic, I think, slightly controversial. It is the topic of reincarnation, what we call in Hebrew Gilgul Neshamot. So what is reincarnation? So first of all, I know this might be obvious to our vast audience of 64 people.
There are hundreds. I will not sit here and have you.
In any case, I'm sure because you are the elite 0.00001% of those who actually watch podcasts, so you probably know that there's a distinction between the resurrection and reincarnation. People sometimes confuse these two things. Resurrection is universally held by Jewish sages. It goes back all the way to the Tanakh itself, the Torah, the prophets, and the writings. It is the belief that in the days of the Messiah, or after the days of the Messiah, there will be a return of many souls to their bodies. There will be a revival of the dead. That's not what we're talking about, although we may talk about that at some future date. I feel like I just want to mention something which Moshe Shapiro said about it, which is just, he says, the more you understand your current life as a miracle, the less miraculous resurrection appears. The nice. More we take our current existence for granted, the more miraculous nice. Resurrection appears.
Nice.
Like to great time. Beautiful. In any case, but close parentheses, this will not be on the final, and that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is Gilgul Neshamos, or reincarnation. So, carne is the flesh, as in carne asada.
I'll take your word for it.
Delicious, right? Carne, right? Reincarnation has got nothing to do with condensed milk.
Con carne? Is con carne involved flesh?
Carne is flesh.
Oh,
so
nice.
Incarnation means something going into the flesh.
So chili con carne.
Correct.
Is what you're saying means chili with flesh.
Well, meat. Yeah, meat. Or, for example, when we talk about incarnate, that means something which has become into the flesh.
Carnation, the instant.
I said it has nothing to do with condensed milk. No.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Right.
I'm sorry I wasn't listening.
You were not listening. Okay. Carne, as in carnivore, is an eater of.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Right. So it's all the same Latin root. In any case, reincarnation means, again, to go back into the flesh once again, i.e., a soul that was once in a body. Reincarnation means after that body has been junked, after that body has gone for the dirt nap, then the soul still exists. And the soul, in certain cases, will come back, be put back into a different body. Reincarnation, meaning it will be once again come back into the flesh.
Oh, just a question here. Are you saying then that as far as our own independent identity, my individual existential identity, I am a soul, the body is not necessarily me. Is that required to believe that if you believe in reincarnation?
I don't know. It's a great question, and I'm not so clear about it. I'll tell you why, for a few reasons. A, since the body is the vehicle to express what the soul needs to express in this world, and it's also the mechanism by which this world interacts with the soul, and which the soul is elevated or dragged down, either way, that means, the body certainly affects one's free will and one's, right? In other words, one's appearance. If you look like Jean-Claude Van Damme or Arnold Schwarzenegger, your psychology will be different than if you look like Woody Allen.
Yes.
And so there are many factors. I mean, that's an extreme example, but there are
Right.
many factors. So I would say that the body does form part of the identity of me. When I say me, I
But
mean
you could say that
a
about
human
any
being.
of the circumstances that I'm born into. I'm
That's
not my
part of me.
house, but the kind of house I have could inform who I am. I'm not my neighborhood, but the kind of neighborhood I'm in could impact the person I become.
I think so. And secondly, if you look at our liturgy in the Tefillah, that one of the first prayers we say in the morning, which is interesting just to analyze it, is Elokai, my God, Neshama, the soul, Shenatata bi, that you place within me, Tahorahi, is pure.
Right, so who's me?
Ah, exactly. If I am completely identified with the soul, then who is talking? The soul you place within me. So evidently this, in other words, so the body does form an aspect of the, I mean, you know, it can't complete, can't ignore it. We're not souls. We're
But if
body
you
and
say
soul.
that, then the fact that the reincarnation, by definition, involves moving from one body to another body to another body. Doesn't that seem to suggest to you that the body itself can't be part of my essence? Because otherwise, how could I just keep on going through one body after another body after another body?
Well, the essence of the soul is broad enough and powerful enough that it may incorporate a number of different possible aspects of identity, right? You know, you,
Okay.
for example, during your life,
Yeah.
you might change roles at a certain point, right?
Yeah.
At some point you're, you know, at some point you're single, then you become a husband or a wife, then you become a parent,
Right.
right? You might become an employer or an employee. These certainly
Right.
affect. So I don't think that's it's
Again,
so
but I
radical
think
to say
each
that.
time you do this, I think what you're describing are more like nature. They're more the circumstances that I find myself in and am impacted by, as opposed to what is me? Like if I ask the question,
I think
what
they
is
become
me?
part of me. They become part of me. They're
Okay.
incorporated into me, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, again, I Not
Got
clarity.
it.
I don't have clarity on this, but yeah.
Okay.
So that's how we define reincarnation. So reincarnate now, usually, and according to most opinions, it appears that reincarnation is a human soul going into another human body at some point. There is an opinion, which you do find in Kabbalistic sources, that a person could be reincarnated as an animal, which is problematic, but okay, let's grant that. So, but in general, we refer to reincarnation. It's that it's the person may your soul may have been here before.
I was once told when I was a teenager, a Hasidic, it was told to me as a Hasidic story by a Lubavitcher that involved the person being reincarnated as a grain of wheat.
That's a new one to me.
Okay. All
I
right. I've been carrying it around with me, but it's not necessarily from a academic source. It was a person passing it down.
Okay, so now, so the question number two. Now we've more or less defined Gilgal, and I think part of, I don't know if this is part of the definition, but we think of it, part of it is the purpose. What's the purpose? It would appear that the soul has a limited time in this world, and it may not have accomplished its goal or its purpose in one lifetime. It might need a number of lifetimes. I don't know. I tend to look at someone like Rashi or the Rambam or the Ramban, etc. What they accomplished in their short life. Rashi lived 65 years. But I don't, I mean, again, the pure guesswork. I can't
That's
imagine that.
next year. That's next year for us.
What's that? Oh,
65.
yeah. But I don't, I can't imagine that he needed to reincarnate. I mean, what he accomplished, it would take people 10 lifetimes to do. Right? So I don't know. So, but not everyone. There's a great story which I heard, and this is, again, can't prove a story, but, you know. So the story is told that the Chazon Ish from Avram Yeshaya Karelitz, Bnei Brak, 1950s, who was at that time, he was quite old and he was not well. It was very difficult for him to stand. So he was sitting in his office and a woman came in to speak to him with her son, who was developmentally disabled. I think it was Down syndrome. She walked into the office and the Chazon Ish gets up and stands, gets up off his chair, stands up with, and it was clear that it was painful and a struggle for him to do so. And when the woman and her son sat down, the Chazon Ish then sat down. And this woman was very surprised by this, because here he is, one of the greatest rabbis of his time, and he's very old, and he's not well, and he's standing up. She asked why he did that. And he said, I'm standing up in honor of a soul that is almost at the end of its journey. He says, because while it's true that you are obligated to increase the abilities of your son to the maximum that you can, and every step you take in that direction is incredible. He says, however, because he has very limited abilities, that means his goal, that his task in this world is not a massive task. He's almost at the end. So he's in this world for whatever reason, but it's a soul that's almost at perfection. That's
beautiful. Yes.
Right. So that's one story about the Chazon Ish. There's another story. Do you mind if I'm telling a story?
I would like you to tell some. I might even jump in with a few.
There you go. Right. So there's a Hasidic story. Again, I can't prove any of these stories. You can never prove it. But so Hasidic story, this is how I heard it. The Baal Shem Tov, founder of the Hasidic movement, Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov, in synagogue one morning, in shul one morning, he calls over someone. He says, listen, we need to do a bris. We're going to go and do a bris, a circumcision. So I need the mohel, circumciser, and I need 7 guys. So there'll be 9 of us, and with the father, we'll have a minyan. Can daven there. So they get into the carriage. He has a stretch carriage. And anyway, and they roll out from Mezhebozh or wherever they were, they come to a small house. The snow, it's typical Ukrainian, day. The horse is half dead, the carriage wheel is broken, there's Cossacks and
it's all in black and white.
Absolutely.
There's nothing besides black.
Lots of vodka. Right. Anyway, so they knock at the door, and a man comes to the door, and Baal Shem Tov says to him, Mazel Tov, we're here to do the bris. The guy says, how did you know? What? He says, my wife had a son 8 days ago. This is the 8th day. We didn't know what to do because the horse is half dead, the wheels on the carriage are broken, there's snow, there's Cossacks on the road. And now you're here. He says, yeah. Baal Shem Tov says, yeah, we're here to do the bris. They do the bris. Like the parents call the son Yosef. Everyone has a l'chaim. The mother takes Yosef into the other room of the house. It was a 2-room house. And to nurse him, there is a horrific scream. They run into the room. The child has tragically passed away. What goes from celebrating a bris turns into taking care of a deceased child. Parents are distraught. Anyway, they stay there for a while. They arrange. Someone goes back, arranges Chevra Kedusha. They're on the way back to Mezhebozh. One of the Hasidim asks the Rebbe, I don't get it. He had this amazing divine inspiration that we need to do a bris. We went, we did the bris. They called him Yosef, and then the kid dies. What's going on? So Baal Shem Tov says, I don't know the whole story, but I can tell you part of it. Today was the Yortzeit, the anniversary of the passing away of Rabbi Yosef Karo, author of the Code of Jewish Law, who lived in Sfat. He says, Rabbi Yosef Karo, when he was a child, There was some type of cholera epidemic where he lived, and they had to wait to do his Brit, his circumcision, because of the sickness. And he says that called they called that child Yosef. That was divine inspiration, because that was the soul of Reb Yosef Karo, who came back into this world for one reason and one reason alone: to fulfill the mitzvah of being circumcised on the eighth day, which he had not had until this moment.
Cool. Now I have a story,
Yes.
but it could seem like a downer because it has to do with something that actually happened to me, but it's not being told to be a downer. It's being told to pass on wisdom about this subject.
I'm bracing
But
myself.
okay, wait, brace yourself. So, anyways, at one point, Sippy and I, Sippy, gave birth to a baby, and the baby lived for a day. The baby passed away after a day. It was a weird. A novel could be written about that day. Will Shansky was the happened to be the doctor on staff at Shaarei Tzedek. It just was absolutely crazy.
Close friend
Anyways,
of ours who we went to yeshiva.
yes, for and we're still in touch with very much. What happened was the baby was born at Miskav Ladach, which was one hospital. Then we took, but the baby had to be taken to Shaarei Tzedek because Miskav Ladach did not have a neonatal intensive care. So the, and Shaarei Tzedek did. So the baby was taken, which meant that Sippy never really got to spend time with the baby. I spent a day with the baby before the before she died, but Sippy never really got to spend any time with the baby. So I come back and I have to tell her the baby died, and then the social worker is there and she's speaking at Sippy, and she's saying, you know, you need closure. So she was suggesting that before they take the baby to be buried, that Sippy is taken to the morgue and they give her the baby to hold. And she also suggested that there be a burial with a, you know, with a funeral for the baby, so that again, all about closure. So it seemed weird to me, but I didn't know what to do. So I called Ramosha, and so I call him on the phone, and he listens to me, and then he's it's like he was slapping me through the phone, like to get me to wake up. And he's going, "This is absolutely shtuyot." He said, "This soul is not part of this world. This soul came here briefly for a tikkun, and now it's gone. If it had lived in this world and acted in this world, then it should have a marker in this world. But it did not. It was just here for a brief tikkun. Don't listen to her, and don't." To this day, that when it comes up, that, you know, we still talk about whether, you know, what she thinks, if she thinks it would have been better one way or the other, but no, it doesn't seem like there is a way to know about that for sure. But he specifically said to me in that thing, he said, "This is a soul that came in for a tikkun, and it didn't need to stay here. And so it doesn't need to be marked here."
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, sometimes, and Rav Dessler talks about this, Michtav Meliyahu, that sometimes the tikkun, meaning, just to translate the word tikkun, I don't know how I would translate that, fixing some type of
Repair, repair.
repair, to fix, to perfect, is not necessarily, Rav Dessler says, carried out consciously by the soul itself. The soul may be here and have an impact on those who surround it in terms of prayer, in terms of suffering, in terms of joy, in terms of many, many different ways in which a soul, even without any free will, without consciousness, can have an impact on those around it. And that is its, that might be its tikkun.
Interesting.
He says
Interesting.
that one of the reasons in Jewish tradition, in Jewish law, not, it's not tradition, you know, tevye, right?
Right.
But in Jewish law, we venerate even the small moment of life, halachically speaking. right? Famous, the right? If someone is trapped under a collapsed building on Shabbos, obviously you're allowed to desecrate, and it's not desecration, but you're allowed to do anything you need on Shabbat to get that person out. What if they uncover the person partially, the doctor on site looks at the person and says, this guy is not going to live for more than a few hours. Not only that, he says he's not going to live for more than a few hours and he will not even regain consciousness. The poskim, halachic decisors, Mishnah Brura and others say, 100% you are obligated to do whatever is necessary on Shabbat to take that person out of the building, to give him those few hours of life, even if it will be unconscious. There's a value to that life, even for a day or a few hours, even if the person's not conscious, in the case of the baby, in the case of this guy under the building, because whatever, the rescue workers did that. There were people there praying. There are people, so we don't know, Tikkun. But those, yeah. So those are, that's yeah.
Okay.
So for our viewers, three stories about this idea of Gilgal. But now, how central is this, or is this part of Judaism? Well, clearly we're talking about Baal Shem Tov and the Chazon Ish and Rav Moshe Shapiro. These are some important personalities. What if we go all the way as far back as we can? So first and foremost, reincarnation is not, it's not mentioned explicitly in the Torah, prophets, or writings.
It is part of the museum of things you would expect to find in the Torah, but do not.
There you go. We should have spoken about it last week. Perhaps
it was too big. It was too big a subject.
This is the reincarnation annex of the museum.
There you go.
And you do not have to buy a second ticket. You can just
do not.
Just go into
it,
annex,
correct.
And explore.
Yes.
So, first of all, I should point out, there are two of our great, great sages. By the way, also, reincarnation, aside from not being mentioned in the Torah, prophets, and writings, is not mentioned in the Talmud.
Just as one caveat, even though
yes.
The Vilna Gaon did write a commentary on the Book of Yonah, in which he says that on a deeper level, Yonah is about reincarnation. That Yonah is the soul, and he dies, comes out, you know, etc., with the fish, etc.
100%. And the Zohar, and the vast majority, the Zohar, the Holy Zohar, talks about it at length in many different places. The great Kabbalists, the Arizal, Reb Chaim Vital, Reb Moshe Cordovero, Nachmanides, and others talk about reincarnation. Rabbeinu Bachai, and many, many of the great, great medieval.
I was only mentioning because we're saying it's not in Tanakh, but he might say that might be on the surface, like we said about Olam Haba last time. Yeah.
What I mean is, yes, yeah. I should clarify. What I mean is, it's not explicit.
Okay.
Definitely not explicit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there were Rav Saadia Gaon, in his book Emunot VaDeot, the book of beliefs and knowledge, says that it's not a Jewish idea. This is in section 6, chapter 8. He says there are people who call themselves Jews, that's the language in the translation, who believe in Gilgal. And they believe, they call it He'atkut. I don't know what the word he used in Arabic is, but in Hebrew it means transmission of the soul. And he says, I don't believe, it's not true. He says, this is something which has come from non-Jewish sources. And he says, I do not accept it. It's not part of Judaism. In addition, Rabbi Yosef Albo, in his Sefer HaIkrim, also rejects the concept of Gilgal. And interestingly, the Rambam never mentions it. What is it? I'm looking at Rabbi Yosef Albo. Rabbi Yosef Albo did not accept it.
And So this would be for the Museum of Things You Would Expect to Find in the Rambam, but Do Not.
So it appears that the Rambam did not agree with it, although we don't, he didn't talk about it, so we don't really know. But Rav Sajagon and Rav Yosef Albor definitely disagree with it. However, as I mentioned, the Abarbanel and the Mabit and the Ramban and all of the Rav Yosef Karo, all the great, great sages throughout history, including the Gaon of Vilna and all the Hasidic rabbis and most of the and the vast majority of Sephardic rabbis, the exception of the some
The Bahir, the Kabbalistic work, the Bahir, which is a relatively early Kabbalistic book, mentions it. Yeah.
And the one of the great mentions of it is just a fascinating. It's the Zohar on Parshas Mishpatim. Now, Mishpatim literally means these are the laws you shall set before them. So the way the Zohar puts it, I'll just read from it. Well, I won't. I'll translate. But says these are the laws you shall place before them. Eluheim, these are the orders of Gilgul, of reincarnation. These are the laws of the reincarnation of the soul that will come back to this world for purposes of punishment or fulfillment. And the Zohar has a lengthy discussion of the various rules and regulations of reincarnation. And it appears many, many times in the Zohar that it talks about that. And so and sometimes, you know, we'll have very interesting Torah explanations given in the Zohar and other later sources based on ideas of reincarnation. So one of the famous ones is the idea that Moshe was a Shemesh Shmuel talks about this, that Moses was a reincarnation of Hevel. And to some degree, because
Chase, also Chase, right? I think it was Chase is a Gilgul of Hevel, and then Moshe is a Gilgul of both of them. And you have Moshe, Chase, Hevel.
yes.
Moshe, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I noticed that in your notes.
Yeah. And it's I have the it's the Shemesh Shmuel talks about how you know Hevel, whose name means nothing, Cain, whose name means acquisition. So Cain and Abel both represent extremes. He says Hevel is the extreme of self-annulment, humility, and Cain is the extreme of acquisition ambition. So the Shemesh Shmuel says there's something good in both of those. Good to be humble, and it's good to be ambitious.
Got
He
it.
says, what's the negative side of humility? Inaction. Who am I? What? That says Hevel Hevi Gam. He also brought. It wasn't the no initiative. He says, so that's bad. It's a negative side of humility. The negative side of ambition, of course, is that I'm stepping on your face to get where I need to go.
Right.
Like Cain did. He says, Moses, who is described in this week's Torah portion as the most humble of all people on the place of this planet, on the face of this planet, but he has acquired Torah. He's a leader of the people. He is not, inaction is definitely not something you would associate with Moshe. Moshe is a man of action and ambition. Right? He comes up against Korach, who is type of like Cain part two, version two. He's all
Nice.
about ambition.
Nice.
So Korach should have used his ambition in a positive way. He didn't. Now Moshe comes into this world to correct the negative side of Hevel, to be the most humble of all people and still to be have initiative, exercise acquisition, to do what he has to do, and so on and so forth. It's fascinating
Nice.
how he looks at it.
Nice. Nice.
Right. So that's a Shemesh Shmuel, Shmuel Borenstein of Sokachev. Sokachev, I don't know. Sokachev. So all I can think of when I say Sokachev, I don't know why, is laughing.
Oh, Sakatumi.
Yes, unfortunately, that's
Sakatumi, yeah.
my mind. Anytime I say socket job, just well, I'm thinking, oh, I'm hearing. Sorry, it's
My
unfortunate.
kids
I miss saying you.
imagine we used to have these advertisements for monster truck rallies. We used to have them a lot, like in Wisconsin, they would have monster truck rallies or whatever. So they'd have them and they had all these crazy names. So my kids at one point they imagined that you had the Sakachover against the Rogachover this Sunday at Elkhart Lakes Racecourse.
I actually was with my family at a monster truck rally. We went on a trip. I was scholar in residence in some Hartford, capital of Pennsylvania,
Harrisburg.
Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And my daughter researched places to go afterwards. It was vacation time. And she said the East Pennsylvania State Fair, Northeast Pennsylvania State Fair should be fun. We were there, we went there, we were it was we're there, white shirts and everything. We walk into this state fair. We were the only people with a complete set of teeth and no tattoos. It was redneck country. It was unbelievable.
No
And
Amish.
no Amish.
Yeah.
And there was the people walking around eating these huge turkey drumsticks as a snack. This could feed an African village. It was like unbelievable. And there was there was a monster truck race, and we were there. It was a lot of fun. We went to the hog race and bet on the hogs, and it was pretty unbelievable. There was an
People who wonder, what does America have to offer?
oh, the cultural wealth
I
of the
agree.
United States is just unbelievable. World's strongest clown, juggling
Cuisine like fried
golf balls.
Snickers bars
Yes, and those
and
too.
things like that. Yeah, fine cuisine.
Yes.
Ah,
Unbelievable.
to think
Unbelievable.
about it. All right, so
United
now
States. Okay, getting back to.
you are mentioning the venerated sources
Yes.
that do you on the one hand you mentioned Rav Yosef Albo, you mentioned the Rav Sadia Gaon, possibly the Rambam. On the other hand, it seems like you're now setting up that there is a lot of source material that suggests that this is in fact a Jewish notion.
Oh, probably the vast majority of sage. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to do a consensus, but I'm guessing, yeah, seems to be that way.
Yinon Gurvich, our shared Talmud,
Yes.
sent me a while back, sent me an excerpt from some sefer, but it quoted the Stipler from Chaye Olam, from Sefer Chaye Olam, where he concluded that we do believe in this. In other words, even though he said there are Rishonim who disagree, but it seems his sense of the consensus was that this is in fact a Jewish belief, and that most like you're saying, most scholars it seem to agree that it's a Jewish belief, and he said it, he himself would suggest that it is in fact a Jewish belief.
Although, would we consider it heresy if someone does not believe in it? In other words, he's not contradicting any of the 13 principles of faith of Maimonides. I don't know if we'd, the guy would be an outlier in traditional Judaism. I don't know if it'd be heresy. I don't think so.
Like the it would it's not a like a halacha, and it's not like he's going to do something
Right.
necessarily
Exactly.
based on it,
It's
so
not a
he's not
principle of
acting
faith. It's not a principle of
right. And there are opinions of people that are considered venerable
yes.
who already said they don't agree with it, so I would ag agree if he said that if he added to it that the people who believe in it are bringing in, I don't know, if he denigrated the people who believe in it, then maybe he could be in trouble. But anyways, if he's just saying
Yeah.
that he goes with the, I agree. Yeah.
I don't think it's
I would not
heresy.
be.
I
But
mean, I've been
when
called a heretic for saying, expressing the opinion publicly that the Maharal did not make a golem.
what?
And someone yelled at me that
Are
I'm
you
a
kidding
Torahist,
me?
I'm a heretic.
They yelled from the from seriously from the crowd.
I was at a Gateway seminar.
That is hysterical.
Which one of the 13 principles of faith did I just contradict? I mean, please let me in on this. Unbelievable. In any case, now, reincarnation is used as an explanation for various mitzvot. Abar Benel talks about it at length, the Zohar, but about, for example, Yibum. We have this mitzvah where if a man passes away, his married man passes away without children, then there's an obligation for his surviving brother to marry the widow. If the widow, if he doesn't want to, there's a ceremony called chalitza, release from that obligation. It's a quasi-divorce because they're reconnected by the Torah because of that obligation to marry. And by the way, we have a mutual friend who just came to the States a few months ago to do chalitza for his brother, his deceased brother. So he contacted me during that time. But anyway, so one of the ideas of Yibum, of this idea, what we call levirate marriage, I think is the English term used. Which doesn't tell you anything, it's meaningless.
No, it's phylacteries. It's
exactly, phylactery. Same idea, yes. Yeah. So, which basically is the idea that you're taking the person who's spiritually closest to the deceased, his wife, the widow, the person who's physically the closest match to the deceased, his brother, they have a child. That child now becomes, so to speak, a reincarnation for the soul of the deceased to be in this world. That's how it seems to be understood by some of the commentaries. And this will explain to some degree the shoe. Because the ceremony of chalitza involves this woman takes off the man's shoe. They have a special shoe. She takes off the shoe and they declare he is called because he did not want to provide the body for the soul of his brother. He didn't want to do this mitzvah. He is called Beit Chalutz Hana'al, the house without the shoe. Really? What? It's so strange, right? It's like begging for explanation. So the Malbim and others discuss this idea, and they say the following. Look at shoe. Where do you see shoes in the Torah? First place, Moses goes to the
burning.
God tells him, take off your shoe. Yeshua has prophecy, speaks the angel, says, take off your shoe. The Kohanim, priests in the temple, don't wear shoes. Yom Kippur, we don't wear shoes, leather shoes. A mourner doesn't wear shoes. And we have this mitzvah where the brother does not want to marry the widow. She takes off his shoe. He's the house without the shoe. What's the common thread? So the Malbim and others, Nefesh HaChaim and others, say this, that what the shoe is to the body is to the soul. The shoe allows the body to ambulate and make contact with this world, the lowest level of the body, contact with this world. That's how it can walk around and function in this world. That's what the shoe is.
Those who speak regular English, ambulate would mean to walk around.
Thank you.
I'm just, okay, go ahead.
I know, appreciate it. So anyway, that's exactly what the body does for the soul. The body allows the lowest level of the soul to make contact with this world, to interact with this world. So the shoe, me in place of shoe equals body. Nice. Hence, on the one day a year where we ignore the body completely, we only interact as souls, no shoes.
Nice.
A Kohen goes into the temple. He's not there for any pragmatic material reason. It's purely spiritual, no shoes.
Nice.
The mourner needs to understand that the soul still exists It's taken off its shoe,
Nice.
But it's still
nice.
He doesn't wear
nice.
a shoe.
Nice.
The when a person reaches prophecy, what we call hitpashtut hagashmius, he transcends the physical, takes off his shoe.
Nice.
And when this person has refused to provide a body, so to speak, for his brother's deceased, his brother's soul, he is called the person who doesn't deserve the shoe. He hasn't provided his shoe, the shoe is taken off as if to say, it's a rebuke, to slap in the face.
You caused me just this moment to reflect on one of the Birchos HaShachar, Sha'asali Kol Tzorki.
Yes, exactly.
And we say that means...
People need to know what this means. Yes.
So that bracha, he did for me all, he took care of all of my, what, all my needs.
Yes.
So we say that means shoes. He gave us shoes.
Exactly.
Which is a strange thing to say out of all the things you could think of, Sha'asali Kol Tzorki. But now that you're talking in this light about the connection, it makes more sense that in our work in this world, we need shoes.
Absolutely. So this concept is found in the Malbim, in a couple of places in Chumash, in Parshat Shmot, and in Kitetze. And it's also found in the Ruach Chaim, Reb Chaim Volozhin's commentary on Pirkei Avos, in the very first Mishnah. So it is well grounded, and I think the idea of reincarnation, the idea that the soul moves from, you know, I remember Reb Moshe Shapiro, when he used to quote from someone who had passed away, he would always say, and I think if I remember correctly, he used to say, Shamati ma'adam gadol echad, I heard from a great person, she'einenu chai itanu, who does not live with us. He didn't say who does not live.
Nice.
Who does not live with us. I'm currently doing research.
Nice.
Tunisia. I hope to do a tour of Tunisia.
You're doing two summer trips. Two separate summer trips.
Well, one is
to exotic locations.
Well, yeah. One is Croatia and Spain. It's not that exotic, but okay. So anyway, but the
people describe Croatia as absolutely gorgeous.
Yes.
And Spain
stunning.
Is stunning, and the people are very happy. And you're going on two trips. I'm just pointing this out for all the people.
Okay. So legacy.
I might go to Peoria. It's very possible that I will be going to Peoria. It may not be Peoria itself. It may be someplace near Peoria or Peoria adjacent, is how many people refer to it. You'll be in Tunisia and Croatia. We have parallel lives.
I mentioned Tunisia because there's a rabbi there. There was a rabbi there, a famous rabbi. There's a street named after him in Har Nof in Jerusalem called Chai Taib. His name was Reb Yitzchak Chai Taib. On his grave, if you look at the grave, I have a book here.
Okay. Is it going to be right where you can?
No.
It's actually right where you can reach it.
I have to actually get all the way up the top here. It's a book about Kivrei Tzadikim Ba'olam, Graves of the Righteous in the World.
Yeah.
And anyway, the gravestone, Rav Yitzchak Chai Taib, says, Rav Yitzchak Chai Taib lo mat. Rav Yitzchak Chai Taib did not die. That's what it actually says on the gravestone. And the story behind that is that after he passed away, there was a Jew who was engraving the gravestone, and he wrote Yitzchak Chai Taib, and he wrote mate died, and he wrote the year. That night he has a dream. Rabbi Yitzchak Chai Taib comes to him and he says, "Do you not know that righteous people do not die? We are still alive."
Beautiful.
Tzadikim, righteous. Even and so the man went back the next day and engraved the word law.
Nice.
Not
that's awesome.
do not die above where it says
mate. Are you going to see that? Are you guys going to go to that
grave? So in the original tombstone, the word law, there is testimony that the word law was above the line. But that tombstone was destroyed. The current modern day tombstone that was only 100 years ago or something like that, it's got it all along one line.
Got it.
So
got
we'll
it.
Probably see that. But anyway, that is a that's a classic case. The soul still lives, and and that's actually one of the comforts for someone is to know that that soul still lives. So that's a little bit, Gilgal,
Okay, so now this is a thing. So we've got our established understanding definition. We've talked about who might think that it's a Jewish notion, who doesn't. So I, a while ago, a year or two ago, remember having this discussion with you. I wanted to argue that we don't believe in Gilgal. I wanted to say to you, I can show you that we don't believe in Gilgal, because there's all these places where if we believed in it, Gilgal should have showed up, but it didn't show up. So for instance, in Sefer Eov, where you have a discussion about why somebody might suffer, in the notion of Gilgal includes that a person might have to do a tikkun, you know, from a previous life. So you'd expect that this notion of Gilgal would have been mentioned in the book of Eov. Also, whenever...
It's one of the solutions to suffering of the righteous and prosperity of the wicked. The Ramchal, the Gaon of Vilna, the Zohar and others say that is one of the answers to that question.
Right, but my argument to you is that it shouldn't be called one of... I think the Ramchal has 12 answers to why the righteous suffer. Yes. And he mentions Gilgal as one of them. But I was suggesting to you that this isn't just an answer. It undoes the drama of the question, because we think of this question of why the righteous suffer, tzaddik v'ra lo, we think of that as one of the great, great questions of the human being, that this is, at some point we find ourselves asking this question with, and our tradition is the answer's not available. The answer is not available to us. But we should expect to be bothered by this. Why would I be bothered by this? I get that I still might want to know why this guy's suffering. I might be curious, but I'm not bothered by it, because it's very likely there was stuff going on in previous lives. Rabbi Avadia Yosef was once chastised by the Israeli press for suggesting that the people who died in the Holocaust were Gilgulim. They were previous souls that came to this world for a tikkun. They misunderstood him to mean that they were somehow all evil and deserved to die. But he was suggesting that, you know, here's the big example where people point to the Holocaust, and he's saying, I'll tell you that it's Gilgal. Right. So to me, every time that question came up, if this is how, you know, when we were talking about it, I was suggesting to you that every time this question of tzaddik v'ra lo comes up, it could easily, this should be the first thing somebody says, and it should be the only thing somebody needs to say. It's possible. You don't have to say you know for sure, but it's possible that this is a Gilgal
suggested by various commentaries.
Right, but only one. It's not just one. It's the answer.
No, it's not the only answer.
I'm saying you don't need any other one. It's not a pressing issue.
Nachmanides has a whole bunch of...
You don't need the other ones. You don't need them. You're not going to be bothered anymore. Move on.
You may need them if this person's not a Gilgal.
We don't know. We don't know. We don't have to know. At this point, if we assume, you say to me, why the righteous are suffer, I'm going to assume it has something to do with a Gilgal.
Yeah, but not necessarily. It may not be.
Well, I'm not going to know everything about somebody. There's a lot of mystery, but I'm not going to be bothered by tzaddik v'ra lo.
Well, you may.
Also, the Gemara. The Gemara talks about Yisurim. The Gemara is talking about Yisurim, and it says, what should you do when you're suffering Yisurim? So the Gemara says, you know, do a cheshbon ha-nefesh. So look inside, doing a personal encounter.
I think you've just answered the question. I think when we spoke about it, I remember I saw an amazing video by Rabbi.
When I speak to you, I remember every word. I remember your every expression. You vaguely remember that we ever had this conversation. Very important to me when we had it.
But I remember discussing it with you.
Okay.
I remember, I think we were at a bagel place in Chicago when we had the discussion.
That's possible. Having,
yeah.
Emma's. It's possible.
Very big. Yeah, it was very good. Good yeah. Bagels. Anyway, so, but I remember a video, short clip of Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Zecher Tzadik Livracha.
Yeah.
Someone asked him the answer to suffering, why the righteous suffer and the evil prosper.
Yeah.
And he, in his most beautiful, eloquent way, that only he could express it, he said, I think that God does not want us to know the answer to that question, because he wants us to be bothered by suffering so that we will strive against it and we will work against it and we will try to resolve it. He says, if we would understand why there is suffering, there may be less incentive psychologically, emotionally, to struggle against it. And I think in this case, it might very well be that, like the Gemara that you quoted says, if a person has pain coming upon themselves, what should they do?
Cheshbon ha-nefesh, that's the first thing.
In other words,
the personal accounting.
First thing they did is, oh, well, you know, it must be a past life. I'm pretty happy this has happened. Right? No, right. We want the person to say, well, okay, let's forget the past life thing. Let's look at what I can do to improve my life here in this
world.
As
if there is no.
My relationship, exactly. Right. In other words, you're much better off. Humanity is better off not thinking in those terms. And maybe that's why it's not mentioned so much. It's concealed.
It's concealed. That's the point.
You're saying more than that. You're saying not just that it's not mentioned. You're saying it's deliberately concealed.
Concealed. I think you're right. It is deliberately concealed.
I think you are correct. And I think the reason might be what Rabbi
said. Nice. You also gave another reason. You sent me a recording from Simon Jacobson.
Yes. Yeah, one of the Jacobsons. Yeah.
It was Simon Jacobson. Yeah. And he suggested that he also acknowledged that it seems to have been suppressed or hidden, this notion of Gilgul. And he was suggesting it's possible that because if you knew this notion and accepted it, you would have the same problem as somebody who lives for 1,000 years. Why, you know, the explanation of why it is that Hashem shortened man's life is because with a long life, the person doesn't feel, it's very similar to what you were saying just before, the person doesn't feel urgency to improve because they've got such a long time. Maybe it'll be the same kind of thing with Gilgul, that if a person knows, if I don't get it right this lifetime, I'll get it right next lifetime. If I don't get it right next lifetime, I'll get it right. So I don't have the urgency to make the most out of this life.
100%. So I think for that reason, I think what we need to do is charge extra for anyone who wants to go into the reincarnation annex in the museum.
Why?
Don't want to make it too expensive.
Oh, I see. Like, we don't. I hear what you're saying.
Right,
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
It could backfire. Because then people are curious. What are you trying to keep us away from?
Good point.
Right. So we are acknowledging that if in fact we do believe in it, which it does seem like we do. If in fact we do believe in it, which it seems like we do, we're then having to say that this information was purposefully suppressed. It could be they're taking a hint from the fact that the Torah doesn't go there and the Navi doesn't go there. Maybe, you know, maybe later Chazal are saying, like, if they already weren't going though overtly, maybe we shouldn't go there overtly or something. But it's until at a certain point, the Middle Ages, at some point, this information is not getting out. It's not coming out. And then at some point it comes out. But ask the average Jew, the average Jew who will tell you they've heard reincarnation stories. Because there's, by the time you're finished hearing stories of tzaddikim and rebbes and things like that, there's some reincarnation story in there. Everybody's heard some kind of story of reincarnation. Absolutely. Right. But who thinks about that their next life is going to be reincarnation?
It's not part of our regular.
No.
Educational system.
People go, what happens after you die? Well, most likely you're going to be reincarnated into another body and start over. That's most likely what's going to happen. I don't know for sure, but instead they're directed to think of the soul as a disembodied self moving through various stages of a plane of existence that, you know, is only spiritual, etc., and which is very ethereal and very difficult to imagine. It seems to me like what we should be telling people is, unless
maybe we shouldn't be. That's the point.
Right.
Amazing. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
For all you who are watching, the 50 or so people,
several hundred, do not listen to him.
Please,
I value every single one of you.
I value
your lives are important. This hour that you just spent listening to us, you didn't have to do that. And we're grateful. We're very grateful that
I'm not ungrateful. I'm just, it's a very small. Okay. In any case, tell your friends about it.
Mordechai, if somebody wants to go on one of those tours with you,
yes.
If somebody wants to go on one of those legacy tours to Tunisia or Croatia,
or Philippines,
or the Philippines, do you think they can still get on that trip? They should contact Legacy Tours, Miriam Schreiber, Legacy Tours,
Legacy
in order to do it. And Mordechai's appearance today is provided graciously by Legacy Kosher Tours.
And if you want, you can look at all these future tours on my website, which I just went live this week, rabbibecher.com. So go to rabbibecher.com and you'll be able to find these events and classes and the
places where you're speaking.
And this podcast automatically is uploaded to that.
So, I noticed it was like pretty far down though.
Yeah.
You had a lot of other things before the podcast. You were featuring pretty much everything else you do before it got to the podcast.
No, it's a matter of things which are revenue, higher on the list.
Revenue generating?
Yeah. I have to pay the mortgage company. So, okay.